The Down to Dunk Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things Thunder basketball and the NBA.
Welcome to the Down to Dunk Podcast. Today is my absolute joy and pleasure to get the opportunity to interview the one and only Coach David Thorpe from ESPN. He is, and this is only about 5% pandering, the hands-down best NBA analyst for ESPN. You can find him on True Hoop Network, and he works as the executive director of Pro Training Center in Florida. Welcome to the pod, Coach Thorpe.
Thanks for having me.
So we were told by Royce that one of the best ways to interview you is to throw out some questions and then just get out of the way, and that is exactly what we're going to do. So the first question we have, what would you do with a Thunder big man situation? Do you like what they've done with Canner, Adams, McGarry? And I saw that you posted with Henry Abbott last night about Mitch McGarry. And what would you do to improve these guys? How does the flow? How would you work with it? I'll just let you kind of talk about the big man situation.
All right. Well, first of all, you got to look at the holistic view. What's their plan, you know, as a franchise going forward? Specifically, we're talking about Durant Westbrook. I don't know how you can talk about Oklahoma City's future without addressing that point. So I apologize if I'm going to steer you away a little bit from the bigs at first, because I'm one of those guys who thinks that Oklahoma City's got some issues here going forward with Durant and maybe him going home. Everyone loves their hometown, whatever. I don't think it's necessarily a magnet in every case, but in Durant's case, I do think there's a pull there. And so you've got to ask yourself, all right, we've not really come close to sniffing a championship. We have won one, I believe, finals game with the dynamic duo that you've had for all those years and the trio with Harden. And we've seen what Westbrook can do when he's on his own. I think those guys play just fine together. Obviously, it's silly to think that they don't. I don't think Westbrook keeps Durant down. I don't think Durant really has a problem with knowing he's got to share the court with someone as good as Westbrook for the same reasons that, you know, LeBron and Wade and Bosch got together. And LeBron wanted Kevin Love and plays with Kyrie. You have to have more than one score unless you're the Rockets. And they just do it a different way with Harden. So I think that it's more of, all right, we've tried it here. If you're Kevin Durant, he's thinking, I've tried it here. But God, go back home and to be able to have my closest family and friends see me on a daily basis and bring a championship to DC, that just has some pull in my opinion. So I know Sam Presti said yesterday it's absurd to even think about trading him. I've said this for a season. I know someone said the other day, Tom Penn, I think, talked about it, but I've been talking about it for over a year. In fact, I didn't even tweeted about it last year that, would this be maybe the last year we see those two guys together in Oklahoma City? And so Westbrook, I think, has a natural pull to the Lakers. But I also think that if he knows he can be the man, which is what he is in Oklahoma City, if they were to move Durant, he wouldn't be the case in L.A. for a couple of years with Kobe there still. So how do you build around that? You know, what can you get for Durant? I think it's ridiculous to not at least consider it. I've often made the comment that never again will we see a Cleveland and a Toronto situation when they lost LeBron and Bosch and got nothing in return. It would be incredibly negligent for the Thunder to be faced with that. So you at least have to consider those options. So let's just ask ourselves, all right, with Durant and Westbrook intact, how are the big men for Oklahoma City? And it's an incomplete. We don't know for sure. I do think that they're an upgrade over Kendrick Perkins. I'm probably not alone in that assessment.
No, I don't think
so. I don't know why in the world they were so married to it for so long, although I will say that Kendrick is probably a much better respected teammate than what you'd maybe think. I'm really impressed with what I've heard from what he's done behind the scenes directly from players. And maybe that has something to do with it. There is a value to that. In much the way maybe Udonis Haslam carries, because he's a captain in Miami, but he was very much a vocal leader behind the scenes because of his ability to kind of to glue people together. So Kendrick did that, but Adams is better defensively, and and brings a toughness level that I think has real value for what the Thunder are. They're not a weak team by any stretch of the imagination, but I think he makes them even tougher. I'm not really decided how I feel about Cantor overall, although I think it was the right move and a step in the right direction. We don't know yet ultimately what he'll bring. There's still a lot of learning he has to do. The Jazz, by the way, have been much better since they traded him, as you probably have been aware of. And so I don't know yet, you know, how that long-term fit's going to be. But I think it's the NBA is always about an experiment. And just like in a laboratory, you're going to have failures and successes, and you want to build off both. And I think the Thunder have done an amazing job over the years, for the most part, in doing that. So I think those two guys plus McGarry gives them a real chance. Right now, the way McGarry's mobility looks, he's probably better off as a five than I think initially was projected, more of maybe as a guy that could play the four. And I do think he can play some from the perimeter. But I've not been impressed with his ability to move. And I don't know if it's just related to his injury or not. We'll know in time. I thought he was more explosive when he was a freshman than what he's looked on tape for you guys. But he's got some game to him, and he plays really hard, as I think the other guys do as well. So I think it'd be nice to have a five for Oklahoma City, at least two of the three guys that can really play from the perimeter. I see what Houston's doing, where they often have no one in the paint. They really play a lot of five around zero and then run a guy in the paint off ball screen action, or when Harden is doing his thing, no different than what Westbrook can do, and drawing attention even when he's not driving. You just have to be so aware of where Harden is. Then they can have guys slash, both perimeter players and big guys slash in. So I like the idea of having threats in that position, and I don't think Adams is that. I think Cantor can be, if he isn't already, and I think McGarry can be. So I think they're moving in the right direction with that. If they were to move Durant and keep Westbrook, then maybe you'd want a little bit better offensive player at that position. Although, I do think Cantor's got the potential to be a really good offensive scorer, which I'm sure Oklahoma City is going to try to verify over these next 5 weeks, and then maybe even next season.
So just kind of following up a little bit about that in two different ways is for the Rockets, you bring up the Rockets, and I keep thinking about Dwight Howard, and it's always the knee-jerk reaction for the fan and some media to think that, well, man, they're playing better without Dwight Howard. Would he be a detriment when he comes back? So how does that evolve for the Rockets when Howard does come back to continue to save that space for Harden? Because Harden is playing out of his mind right now, and I think in my opinion I think he has as much of a case for the MVP as Steph Curry does, just because of how he's kept them afloat. So how would you evolve kind of the way they run their offense based on Howard coming back eventually?
Well, I agree with you. I think he's actually the clear-cut MVP. Like, I don't think it's close. I love Steph Curry. I've loved him for a long time, and I don't want to waste your time and how I try to get some teams to draft him in the top 10, and they didn't, and I thought they were silly, and I still think they were silly. I think everyone agrees with me now. But I think Harden's the MVP because of what you just said. They're now fourth in the West after losing an amazing game last night in Portland. I watched it, and they almost won without Dwight Howard, and yet they're still right there in contention without him, and I think it's because of James Harden. He's second in the league in scoring, and I didn't look last night what his final numbers were, but going into the game, the last like five games, he had averaged 9 assists a game. I mean, pretty astounding statistics for him. And he's playing much better defense and caring more. I don't think there'll be any problem. I don't think they're playing better with Howard out. I think they'll be better when he's back. I think he makes a difference defensively and on the glass, obviously. And he's a much better rim threat than Joey Dorsey rolling to the rim, and Monta Ellis and so forth. So I think that there's some chemistry issues, and I think there's a coaching issue, both that have to be answered. Dwight and James, I don't think are brothers. And I think that's can be changed. I remember, and I think I've told this story before in ESPN, Udonis Haslem called me when he was in his third season, and they had lost in the Eastern Conference Finals the year before. and they were tied at two with the Bulls in the first round of the playoffs when Shaq was their center and Udonis was turning power forward. And I was on vacation that week, and he was complaining about a bunch of stuff. And they ended up winning the next two games against the Bulls, and then they beat the Nets in five games, and they rolled the Pistons and won the championship. And at some point, they just kind of figured out a way to play together when they really hadn't been doing that up until that point. And so, as I told him on the phone back then, and it remains true today, you never know when that match is lit and that starts the fire that bonds the group. You never know what causes it and when it will happen or if it'll happen. And so Howard and Harden can become brothers at some point. It hasn't happened yet, but it doesn't mean it will never happen. And I think if it does happen, I think they can be world champions. That's how good I think Harden is. The McHale question is a deeper one. I don't think he'll suddenly become a good coach. I don't think he's terrible, but I don't think he's good. And I've been pretty outspoken about that. And maybe they'll win a championship and it'll prove me wrong. But I do think that's their biggest obstacle is adjustments in game by him when it matters most. But coaches do get better over time. Doc Rivers is proof of that. Scotty Brooks is proof of that to some degree anyway, when he's decided after years of not doing it to pull Cephalosha from the starting lineup. I think it was last year. And Perkins too. He was just so rigid before that. And if we think Popovich is the best coach in the world today, and I think he might be the best coach of any sport, Brooks seemed to be the antithesis of that. You know, as Popovich changes quarter to quarter more easily than I think Brooks does game to game. And that has to evolve for both Houston and for Oklahoma City, I think, to become the best team they can be in a postseason run.
Yeah, I love that point. And I'm going to skip the other question about the bigs because you helped me segue by rubbing a little salt in the wounds. And so since we talked about Harden, it's probably only fitting that we move on to the Thunder's current shooting guard position and how empty that position is. And so the Thunder right now have Andre Roberson, Deion Waiters, Anthony Morrow, and Jeremy Lamb, which, you know, Jeremy Lamb's kind of stuck on the bench. But looking at those four guys and with as much as you've studied or haven't studied, like, what are your thoughts on that position for the Thunder? Who would you start? What do you see as things that are, you know, flaws in each player? How do you fix them? You know, kind of just a general conversation about the shooting guard position for Oklahoma City.
Can I punt?
Yes.
Is that an option?
We would all like to do that. Yes.
It is. I've known of Sam Presti since he was a freshman in college, because his roommate in college at Emerson was the younger brother of one of my most well-known high school players that I had trained back when I used to do high school players. And I had trained this one player and his younger brother to a lesser degree. The older brother went to Dayton and was a great, great high school player and a good college player. And Sam was his younger brother's roommate, the Pastorino family, a very famous family here in Clearwater. And I knew of Sam back then. We'd go back a long way and have a nice relationship. But I don't know that they've managed that position great, other than I completely support all the things he did and ultimately the decision he made to trade James Harden, because Harden was desperate to go somewhere else and find out if he could be the leading scorer in the league, league MVP, and the best player on a championship contending team. And he had every right to have that ambition. And I think that had Sam held on to him, it could have exploded or imploded, I guess is the term people like to use, in Oklahoma City. What I don't really understand, it's worked out fine. You know, I'm obviously close with Kevin Martin and have been for 13, 14 years now. I thought he was unbelievable in Oklahoma City in a role that was lesser than what he probably thought he could still do, and has proven that in Minnesota. He actually worked out metric-wise. He was a better fit for Oklahoma City than even Harden was at that time, because Kevin's a better three-point shooter, and that's all really Oklahoma City needed. And I was kind of surprised that they didn't really try to keep him. That they probably couldn't have afforded him. And I think he wanted to go ahead back and starting again. But this goes back to Scottie Brooks a little bit. You know, when Westbrook went down, remember, they won 60 games that year. And they were the best team in the West, probably. And I know for sure, based on conversations with those guys, that they thought they were going to beat Miami. And then Westbrook went down, and Scottie Brooks didn't change anything and continue to bring Tsabo as a starter and Kevin off the bench. And as you watch them play against the Grizzlies, I believe they lost in five games, and three of those games went overtime. Well, maybe they won one overtime game, and I don't think so, though. I think they lost like two or three overtime games without Westbrook. And they didn't really do anything except running more and more and more and more plays for Durant. That was a sign to me that the inflexibility of the franchise was an issue. And I thought that he was the perfect answer at that position next to Westbrook and Durant. And when I heard people say Jeremy Lamb would just take Kevin Martin's place, I had a laugh. It's an offensive comment to make. It's a lack of an understanding of what a high-level shooting guard brings to the table and what Jeremy Lamb brings to the table. And the reality is it's a desert there now. Deion Waiters has really no qualities that you'd look for in a guy to come in and play that position alongside Durant and Westbrook. He is a dynamic talent who doesn't have a clue how to play, and that's never changed. You are allowed to change as a player and get better. The example I like to give, I was just talking to some Kings people the other day about DeMarcus Cousins, and someone prominent in their organization asked me, like, what would you say to him? And I said, well, I haven't studied the career of Zach Randolph. Zach probably is ashamed that he spent as many years as he did acting like a fool when he could have been the most beloved player in his franchise, and because he's unbelievable. And Zach is that now. And it just took him a long time to grow up. And I think Waiters is that same kind of guy that maybe one day he'll grow up and understand what his role needs to be and how best he can play it. That time hasn't happened yet. He's still young, but it hasn't happened yet, and I don't know that ever will. Lamb, like, I never thought Jeremy Lamb would be much more than a Daquan Cook. It's who I thought he'd be, a taller, longer version of Daquan Cook. Maybe I was overreaching with that. It appears possible. You know, Roberson obviously is a huge offensive liability. I think the answer in the short term is that you don't get married to any one guy, that you're more pragmatic based on what your team needs, which is going to hinge on who the opponent is and the style that's going to be played and the schemes that are used to defend you and vice versa. Because none of those guys are the guy you can put in with ink. They have all got to be entered with a very light leaded pencil based on who you're playing, you know?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I was a Lamb. I was all in on Lamb, I think, going into this season. And he's just so inconsistent. And the hardest thing is watching him play defense. And it seems like he gets lost almost 90% of the time based on effort alone. And so have you, I mean, I don't know how much you've gotten to study him. Obviously, it's a very specific and small part as far as his season, this season. But what do you think kind of are his issues?
Basketball IQ, motor, feel for the game, playing, you know, I was really negative on him coming out of Connecticut because I watched a lot of tape on him, and of the 100 plays I might queue up at any one time on Synergy, 92 were him coming off multiple screens. And I just thought, well, no one's going to do that in the NBA, that's for sure. Not for a long time anyway. He's going to have to learn to play away from the action. And that just hasn't happened. There's so much about this game that is from the neck up that the average fan just doesn't see. They don't get it. They shouldn't get it. It'd be like us watching a trial and really understanding what the lawyers are doing without the benefit of law school and 25 years of experience practicing law. Lamb just isn't there. But so if you look going forward, maybe you ask yourself, okay, when we were most successful on offense and defense as a team, our best lineup when Harden was there, and then of course when Martin was there, and again, in if you look at the best trio in the NBA after the big three from Miami when Kevin Martin was in Oklahoma City was Ibaka, Durant, and Martin, and the best foursome in the NBA was when you threw Durant or Westbrook in with that group of three. And then they had the second best group of five when Martin was in after the Miami guys who were dominating that year as well. So what was it about that group? Well, you had a big time 3-point shooter that never forced anything, that knew how to get space and get fouled when he was not in the game with Westbrook or Durant, and who made the right plays. So that's basketball IQ, that's shooting, and that's feel for the game and ability to get to the free throw line on occasion when you have the chance. They don't have those guys now, but that's something that they should be actively looking for. There's not a lot of them, but they're out there, and you've got to find them, and they're not going to be as good as what Kevin Martin was. There's not many guys that can score 20 a game in the league and average 15 off the bench the way he did. But that's got to be the ultimate search if indeed you're keeping Durant and Westbrook and the core intact the way they are. But in Lamb's case and in Waiters' case, these are just low IQ guys. You know, why Waiters is shooting so poorly, I don't really know, other than a lot of guys need the ball in their hands a lot to feel like in the rhythm and the balance that they need. And he looks like he's one of those guys, and he's not going to get that at Oklahoma City a whole lot.
Yeah, I remember that year with Kevin Martin. I think it was 12 or 13, and I can't remember specifically. But the Thunder, not only did they win the 60 games, but they also had one of the largest point differentials going into the playoffs of any team since the Celtics that won it in 07 or whenever that was. And so, yeah, that was it was a perfect fit, and it was – you know, the Thunder, it's hard because everybody's so critical. And being a homer as I am, it's hard for me to be critical. But, you know, the money has always been the thing that seems to stop them from doing that, because Martin would have been a great fit going forward in that two-guard position. But you talked a little bit about this and a large part of his lack of flexibility. But can you just give us a coach's evaluation of Scott Brooks and maybe some of his positives, some of his negatives, some of the things you've seen him grow with, and kind of rate maybe his job he's done the last couple seasons?
I mean, I think overall he's been a positive. It's fair to say that he's not elite, but there's only like four, maybe five, six of those guys in the NBA that are elite-level coaches, as evidenced by the statistics that have come out about how few coaches can really – you know, change a team significantly. Most coaches are about the same. They've discovered. You've got some really, really terrible ones, and then the few elite ones. It's almost like a bell curve. But I think he's on the upper echelon in terms of, my favorite thing about Scott Brooks is consistency of message. The thing that I like best about him is he's defense first. I used to watch every press conference he had for a couple of years, and he always just talked about defense, defense, defense. And that was his message in practice. And I thought that was a great anchor to a team that had Westbrook and Durant. They didn't get caught up in the offensive side of things. And when they were at their best, they were a top five defensive team. And that's, to me, a credit to coaching. I think their system defensively was simple and easy to execute, which is exactly what it should be. And I thought that he consistently demanded of that on that end of the floor. And I, you know, he's to be commended for that. I think offensively, he's a little too simple, but it's born of having the kind of talent that he's had. It's hard to be critical when they've had the kind of success they've had. It's easier now when they're not quite there. And of course, injuries are a big part of that. But other coaches have managed to create a better system to accommodate for the obvious risk of injury that's going to occur than I think what he's done. I think that probably a change needs to be made, but it's not personal. This is what happens when you've just run out of luck enough. If Durant Westbrook both say, no way, we're leaving if you don't keep him, then you got to keep him, because I think they've earned the right. There are a few players in the league that could really have that kind of power. Those two guys have it. I don't know that they would do that, though. I think they might want to change. I'm not saying you'd find a better guy. There's just not that many elite coaches. And I think you'd have to cast a global net the way Cleveland did with David Blatt, and not just try to find a retread that's an American coach. Because there's not that many that are better than Scotty, but I do think there are some. But his inflexibility for so long was an issue for me. His lack of creativity offensively is what keeps him from being elite. I'm not saying that the next place he goes, if indeed he does leave, he won't become an elite coach. I think it's possible. I really do. His whole career is proof that you shouldn't bet against him. And I think that there'll be 15 teams lined up to try to hire him, as they should, if he were to lose his job. Because I kind of compare him to Tony Dungy, when Dungy was a football coach with the Bucks. His lack of offensive creativity and nuance kind of cost the Bucks They thought more runs in the title. As soon as they fired Dungy, they won a championship with John Gruden the next year and then fell off the face of the earth. And Dungy had phenomenal teams in Indianapolis for years. I think Scotty is going to be the same way. If he doesn't stay at Oklahoma City, he'll go somewhere else and be better. He won't be worse. He'll be better. And maybe he'll be forced to be more innovative as an offensive coach without those two incredible offensive players. You're talking about two of the best five offensive players in the world. And so I think he'll be forced to, and I think that'll make him better. He won't get worse on defense because that's where he kind of butters his bread. And I think players like him. I mean, it's hard not to like that guy. He's consistent and emotionally mature and really a guy that should be emulated in many respects. I just don't think he's at the level of the few above him, and maybe that's what he needs to get to bring Oklahoma City to that final step.
Yeah, I think that you summed that up better than I ever could. But we always I have this unattainable pipe dream that Pop is going to get, you know, I know he signed it a contract forever, basically, but when Duncan and Parker and all these guys retire, that Pop is going to think, I need to go and lead Oklahoma City to the promised land. And so that's my pipe dream. But so let's move on. Let's move away from the Thunder. Let's talk just real briefly, and I trying to be respectful of your time. Let's be real brief about the rest of the NBA here. And so I have three or four questions about the rest of the NBA. And the first one is about the Philadelphia 76ers. Their plan doesn't look fantastic from a lot of ways when you look at it, but they play really hard and they have random pieces that I like. I think Nerlens Noel is a great piece. I think I really still believe in Embiid, and I don't know if you do as well, and you can talk maybe a little about that. Well, what is their plan, and do you think it'll ever work?
Well, their plan is real simple. They want to continue just to get as many assets as possible that have superstar potential. And they're willing to sacrifice building a sense of continuity and community in Philadelphia to get that. And the casualty of that seems pretty obvious, is why would you be a fan of the Sixers now? I mean, just because of the logo, or because of they're a collection of guys that for a small period of time, with maybe an exception of Nerlens Noel and Embiid, maybe Jeremy Grant, whatever, that these guys are going to be in your city, because they'll be in someone else's city pretty darn soon. So I don't know how anyone comes to game. I certainly would never go to a game in Philadelphia until they have their team in place. And they don't have that team in place now. I think their coach is fantastic. It seems to me that he should be getting Coach of the Year votes, because they're fun and competitive with an amazingly small level of NBA talent. When I mean NBA talent, I mean NBA talent ready to win. I'm not saying they have upside. Of course they do. That's why they're there. But they've clearly said, we don't really care about winning. They do care about winning. They don't want to. And they don't really care that they feel like fans will come anyway. That, to me, is the negative of what Sam Hinkie's doing. The positive is they are going to collect enough guys that look like they have a chance to be stars, if not superstars. And Embiid, to me, is a gigantic risk, no pun intended, because if he is a big guy. I don't like the fact that he's going back in for I don't think it's surgery, but to check in on his foot. That's problematic to me. I saw him play in high school and was mesmerized. I saw he and Wiggins on the same night at a high school 6 minutes from my house. That was a good night. And I brought my son, and I thought Embiid, I actually texted Masai Ujiri, who's like my little brother, and said, this has to be a guy that you're connected with coming out of Africa, because I know he's really involved in trying to get as much talent as he can. You know, great opportunities in high schools in America, whatever. And he knew all about Joel Embiid, of course. And he really has a lot of upside, but we don't know if he'll get there or not. And if he does, it'll be years away. We also know that they're willing to trade a guy who looks like he's going to be a very good NBA player. If they're not ready yet to have that guy be very good, because they traded Michael Carter Williams, who looks like he has a chance to be special, maybe, but they don't want him to be special now. They're still years away from being competitive. But I mean competitive for championships, not competitive in the NBA. So I don't love imagine if every team did what Philadelphia is doing. You'd have eight or nine teams probably contending who are just sucking off the good talent from these other teams. And then you have other teams all in a race to be horrible, who can't wait to trade a player that looks like he might be good too quickly. And all you're doing is signing players to bad contracts. Bad for the player, good for the team. I don't think it'd be good for the league. Luckily, no one else is doing it. But as soon as other teams started doing it, I think you might have some legislation against it, because I think it'd be problematic. They couldn't get KJ McDaniels to sign a bad contract, like a Chandler Parsons contract, which is a four years guaranteed. I think they might have guaranteed Chandler all 4 years. I'm not sure. But it was always at team options. And in the case of Jeremy Grant, I think he signed a four-year deal with a little, you know, pretty good money up front. They're taking advantage of the fact that these kids are desperate for guaranteed money those first couple of years, and they're willing to sign away those next couple of years at a bad deal. Because if you're still in the league in years 3 and 4, and you're making league minimum, you're probably better off doing something else. But that's the event that they're taking advantage of that. And again, if 8, 9, 10 teams are doing it, I think we'd be legislating against it. It may work out great. I think Sam even said this. It may work out great, or it may be considered the dumbest guy on the face of the earth. He's not stupid. But I'm telling you, I don't know if it'll work. I don't think he knows for sure it'll work. At some point, the fans can revolt and really demand of the owner enough already. We'd rather have a 40-win team and connect at least to some players on this team. We can't connect to anyone. You can't buy a jersey, because it'll be a collector's item in a minute. The guy's going to be gone. So I don't love that part of it. But I think personally owners have signed off on it, and because I think Sam's smart enough to know that you need ownership to sign off. And I think after this year, with the kind of picks they're probably going to get, and maybe one next year, they'll start feeling like, okay, we've got enough guys to start building with these guys, and then we'll go ahead and sign a free agent or two to bring us along into the Oklahoma City world of, we go from being terrible to winning 40 games to all of a sudden contending for titles. That's the plan for sure.
Yeah, and they're going to get themselves into a hard place, it seems like, with this upcoming draft, with the two bigs from Kentucky and, you know, Okafor from Duke. And so looking at those two guys and, you know.
Oh, don't forget the Sixers. Not Sixers. The kid, Moody, played in China. They'll have him if they could, too.
Yeah, so they're going to have to make decisions based on that, on players that are already on the roster. And some of these guys that you start to kind of feel like, hey, this may be something, they may have to already move. And so, you know, it is one of those things where that fan base has to trust. And from what I've experienced or heard about the Philadelphia fan base, is good luck having patience with them. Yeah. So the next question, speaking of teams that are kind of, you know, these two teams are a little more on the rise, it feels like. And one of the guys that we do the podcast with is a big fan of both of them. And so he asked, which of the two teams, the Wolves or the Magic, will become a above 500 team first?
It's kind of a trick question because they play in different conferences. One conference is the best conference maybe in the history of the NBA. The other isn't. I probably would pick Minnesota. I think that they're loaded. I think that they've got a lot of good young players. To begin with, Wiggins is going to be a superstar. How do you like Wiggins?
Love Wiggins. I one of my follow-up questions is, and I said this, I watched a game, I think he played in November, and said, I'm not sure there's a more athletic shooting guard already in the NBA than Andrew Wiggins.
Well, he plays more small forward.
Yeah.
I personally think that's his better position. You can play both, and he's guarding four positions right now for them. I think he's got superstar written all over him. I thought this for over a year, that he was the clear-cut prime guy in this draft. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Parker will end up being better, but it'd be surprising to me. Wiggins has more upside. It is an athletic league. He is finding ways to score every night that has evolved. Is great in the post. He loves posting. He's not shooting well lately, but he went through a stretch where it looked like he was the best shooting elite athlete teenager in the history of the NBA. Think about that for a minute, and you'll see that I'm right on that. He's not doing it the same as he was. I think teams they're attaching to him earlier. If you watch them play now, I think Kevin Martin was shooting 4 or 5 threes a game for you guys off the bench. He's getting one a night in Minnesota because of the way teams are playing them on the perimeter with Wiggins and Martin. They're not leaving him, and Rubio is not a threat, and no one gets a double team anywhere, so it's hard for him to get open threes now. But I think he's gonna be amazing. Adrian Payne has a chance to be a nice stretch four that's a shot blocker. It's a very rare combination. any rebounds. Anthony Bennett has similar upside. He's been injured, and I don't know if he'll get there or not. I think Payne is a better work ethic than Bennett, but Bennett did change his body. Remember, Shabazz Muhammad has been out for a while now, but when Kevin Martin was hurt with a broken wrist, Shabazz was maybe the best sophomore in the NBA. He was terrific and changed his body. He's an asset. Zach LaVine, I'm not a fan, but he does have a lot of talent. I just think he won't get it for a long time. But maybe I'm wrong, and Minnesota hopes that I'm wrong. I think KG, I don't think veterans typically are good coaches, but I think KG is someone that can help. He's coaching the heck out of these guys now, day in, day out. In games, he's a nonstop teacher. Gorgui Jang is really talented and needs to get a lot better, but still has starting level talent in the NBA and a guy that could put up 20-20s in games. They're loaded. So do you trade Pekovic? Do you trade Kevin Martin? I mean, you've got assets to move, and they've got a lottery pick. I mean, this last month they've beaten, you know, teams like Memphis and Portland the other night. They've beaten some really good teams, and they're not totally healthy. So I think they're better served to be a playoff team even by next year, again, because they can move some assets. I think Orlando's got good young talent, too. Oladipo's really coming around. Vucevic is probably the most underrated player in the NBA. I thought Harkless would be better. And I love Elfrid Payton. I think he's going to be really good.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I didn't know what you thought of Payton. I really liked him coming out of college and you know, thought he may be the best point guard in that draft. But
yeah,
a lot of people,
I love him.
Yeah,
I think he defends and he distributes. And he's got to learn to shoot and score. He doesn't know how to do that yet. But I think he's got the talent to do that. And so, yeah, I think but they've got to pick a coach. I don't know what they're going to do on that. And they probably made a mistake with Jacques Vaughn. The GM may lose his job there as well. Your Oklahoma City guy. He's under the gun, so they could have wholesale changes there. That's why I think Minnesota's in a more stable place. But it wouldn't surprise me if Orlando wins half their games next year. The East is bad, and they've got good young talent.
So I've got just one more follow-up on Wiggins. Just being a Big 12 country where we are, we got to experience him and Embiid together last year, and I really thought that Kansas team had Embiid not gotten hurt, would have had a really good shot to compete for the championship last year. And so you always do this at some point throughout the season. You take the rookies and some of the sophomores and you put these people that they should study. Like, who should they look at to become who they can be? And so have you started the process of looking at guys that you would suggest Wiggins look at or kind of work towards?
Yes, I have. I'll be writing that pretty soon. I've already done a bunch of guys. Do you want to know who I picked for Wiggins?
Unless it spoils it. I mean, we'll.
No, I don't.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, we'd love to hear that.
Yeah, because I'm not gonna. You know, I'll write about stuff later. Well, who would you pick? I think it's super easy, but I see things a little differently. Who would you pick?
We follow Steve McPherson. He's kind of a friend of the pod out of Minnesota, and so we listen to a lot of what he says, and he keeps kind of bringing up Durant, but he's more athletic than Durant was, I feel like, initially. So I have no idea. I can't think of a comparable for him.
Okay. To me, the simple answer is James Harden.
Okay.
Because I never look at comparables. I only look at weaknesses. And right now, Wiggins can't really beat you off the dribble unless it's a straight line to the rim. He's getting better in full court and changing his speeds. Doesn't change direction great. And in the half court, really doesn't change direction well. He does better when he picks his dribble up in a Euro step like Wade and Harden, those guys. But he really can't do anything off the dribble. And James Harden's probably the best ball handler in the league right now that isn't a pure point guard. In fact, I'm quite sure that he is. He's amazing at creating shots. And that's where if Andrew gets that, forget about it. You're talking about a longtime MVP favorite, because his post game, his shooting, his transition game, what he can do defensively, what he's going to be able to do defensively. When you watch him sprint, I live in Florida, so I've coached some really amazing sprinters that were high level football and basketball players and track stars in high school, whatever. And I've always felt like the best sprinters look like they're jogging. Like Deion Sanders looked like he was jogging when he was in high school at Fort Myers. That's what Wiggins looks like, but no one ever catches him. He's flying. His mom, of course, was an Olympic sprinter, so it's not a surprise. So I think if he can learn to be that good with the ball, like James, that's the one thing that gets him to his best ceiling. I mean, obviously, there's lots of little things you can look at, but to me, that's the first big thing is how to make the ball, how to use the ball as a tool to make you quicker, more deceptive, more able to create space. That's a genius. I mean, Curry's great at it too. Neither Curry nor Harden are world-class athletes typically. Harden has some explosive plays, but it's not, you know, he's not the most athletically gifted guard overall on the court. But he uses that ball so well. So I think that Durant, if Wiggins could do that, I mean, that's not to say he shouldn't try to copy Kevin Durant. Of course he should. But I look at it skill set, and I think that's the biggest hole in his skill game right now that can be most easily improved.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it, and obviously very terrifying for most of the rest of the NBA. So we'll finish with just a quick kind of playoff conversation. Do you have any predictions? Anybody that you kind of think this is the clear cut? Who I like out of the East, who I like out of the West, and then who do you think will be the NBA champ at the end of the season?
I actually was leaning Portland. First, I was leaning Memphis a little bit before the season started. I thought Memphis had the best team in the West. But Conley's so banged up now that I'm off them. You know, I know people say, well, I picked this team in September to stay with it. My buddy Mark Stein does that. I don't know how that makes sense. If you believe in a stock and all of a sudden they turn into horrible profits in real life.
You sell and move on to another. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah.
I mean, Conley's just not the same player that he was. I'm a huge fan, but he's banged up. So they're not as good without him. And then I thought Portland was really going to be a problem in the West until they lost Matthews.
Yeah, that was huge.
So I think it's down to, the Spurs. To me, the problem with the Spurs is they played, I think, the best three games of basketball in the history of the NBA to beat Miami. And pretty significant in what they did, by the way, because had they not done that, had they not raised their level of play to that spot, I think Miami is going for four straight this year. LeBron's already admitted now he wasn't leaving if they had won, which is why I thought he would stay to begin with. I couldn't believe he would decide to leave based on one series where they faltered a little bit because the other team played the best in the history ever of the game. Literally, I think it was the best brand of basketball a team could play that I've ever seen in the NBA. And I think it's naive to think they can get back there again. And so I've not been high on San Antonio's chances. They've proven me wrong before. And I mean, Houston is a dark horse because of Dwight and James. But yeah, we'd have to say right now, based on the Matthews injury, Mike Conley being banged up, I don't believe in the Clippers. I think Golden State is the clear-cut now team to look at in the West. They've got lots of weapons, and they really care about defense, and they really shoot it. And I think in the East, it's going to be – I thought Chicago would win the regular season East if Rose was healthy. That didn't happen. And I thought Cleveland would win the postseason because I thought they'd figure it out by year's end. And I think that's the case still. I'm a huge Hawks fan because I love shooters. So if they won the East, I wouldn't be surprised, but – we haven't seen David Blatt's best. He's at his best in post-game, in post-season series, where he's making adjustment after adjustment. It's really his best thing. I spent a lot of time last year, the Maccabi Tel Aviv management group, spent some time in my gym kind of studying what I do, and we spent a lot of time having meals together. And I had like three or four meals with them in Las Vegas during Summer League, picking their brain as much as I could. And they thought Blatt was just brilliant at postseason adjustments, which I think so too when you look at his record in Europe and the Olympics. I mean, the guy won a bronze medal for Russia. Not the Soviet Union, for Russia. with one great player in Kirilenko. So I think that you'll see that in the postseason. He'll know these teams so well by then. And some of those adjustments will be offensively getting Kevin Love off more. But with their two playmakers in Irving and LeBron, of course, and LeBron, who was not a problem against the Spurs, he was the best player on the court. I think that they're likely to win the East. And then to win that matchup, you know, Golden State versus Cleveland, I'm the simplest guy in the room. I always pick the best player in the series to win the series, almost always, when he's prohibitively the best. And I think that LeBron is. But to get to that point and pick Cleveland, I don't know that I would make that leap because the other guys, it's so new for them. On the other hand, Golden State has never been there either. So it would be a coin flip to me. And, you know, I probably lean to LeBron now, but it's not with any kind of strength of character on it because they've got so many weapons at Golden State and Cleveland's got some holes of guys that just have never been at that level. I think they'll be the two best teams in the postseason, though.
I think that, just kind of piggybacking on that, this is one of the few years where there hasn't been a clear cut as much. You know, you knew Miami was going to be in it, and you pretty much knew the Spurs were going to be in it last year, and you could kind of take a guess for about three or four teams the year before. But this year, I think it really could be a total of six different teams that could be in it. Now, maybe four of those are from the West, and then I think the Hawks and the Cavs in the East, but it should make that a very, very enjoyable playoffs here in about 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to it is when you're talking about that kind of parity, then injuries are the difference maker. In fact, I don't agree with you about last year. I thought the Oklahoma City would win the West in the playoffs last year. And then I picked them to beat the Spurs in that series until Ibaka went down. And then ESPN let us change our opinion. And I did. I went, like I said, I'm not Mark Stein.
Serge went down, it flipped.
Yeah, I just thought that with him, I thought athletically they would be a problem. I probably was wrong when you look at what they did to Miami. But I don't know that they would have been able to be as successful. You know, they just sped up Miami so much. And I don't know that they would have been as successful against Oklahoma City, who plays a more conservative defense than what Miami played. But it was an injury. So I still think it's the same thing with all this parity. You know, who's healthiest, which is something that happens in the NFL. I mean, college, look at you know, Oregon had, I think, their third and fourth best receivers as starters. Against Ohio State. Ohio State had their third-string quarterback. I mean, you know, it's hard to predict in March what teams are going to look like in June because that's, you know, those teams, it's other than to say it's probably going to look a lot different because injuries are a factor.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, Coach, we appreciate you being on the podcast, and we appreciate everything you do for ESPN and all the good work you do, and we just want to say thanks for being a part of it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Down to Dunk Podcast. You can find us at dailythunder.com and downtodunk.com. Follow us on Twitter at DTDPodcast and ask us Twitter questions every Wednesday. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a 5-star iTunes review and your review will be read on the next podcast. Thanks for listening.